and welcome to Stirring the Pot. I'm Linda Nygaard, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. You're listening to the voice of Vashon on Vashon Island, Washington. Today, have two wonderful guests in my studio today, and we're going to talk with them at length about their business. We have Lauren Garaventa.
Yep.
And Jake Heil. And missing is Russell
Bean.
I can never say her name. Yes, Russell Bean, who is MIA, but we're going to talk about her anyway. And today we're going to talk about our new favorite restaurant in town called Ruby Brink. And we have a lot of information to parse your way in the next 30 minutes. First of all, I'd like to take care of a little bit of business before we get into the meat of our discussion. No pun intended. We're running a raffle at Voice of Vashon. It's our key fundraiser, and it's a fun one. For $20, you'll see our people out in the streets asking for money and giving you coupons. And these coupons are $20, and you can buy 4 for $80 or 5 for $100 or 1 for $20. And what it gets you if you win is a $2,000 shopping spree at Thriftway. And you can have 3 people with 3 carts and race in the store and, you know, fill up your carts for $2,000 worth of groceries. I think I could do that. Anyway, I would encourage you to donate some money to the station that keeps us all here. And secondly, I'd like to encourage anybody who's listening, if you have questions, if you have ideas, if you think there's something we're missing, let me know. You can reach me at stirringthepot@voiceofvashon.org, and I'd love to hear from you. So here we are. Hi, Lauren.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm doing just great.
Just great. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the studio. I'm glad you're here.
Yeah, thanks for
having
us. And
Jake, hello to you too.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
So we here in Vashon watched for, how long did we watch that building? A long time.
3.5 years, probably. Roughly.
Yeah, you probably know down to the minute. But now it's open and the doors are swinging back and forth and it's a happy, lively, wonderful place. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what brought the three of you into your partnership and how you met. So maybe, Lauren, you could start with how you got here and how it all started for you.
Yeah, so I moved to Vashon in 2011 to be a butcher. It's what I decided I wanted to do with my life. Mm-hmm. And so I came here to do it. I've been working with Brandon Sheard at Farmstead Meatsmith, and he introduced me to butchery, took classes from him and learned from him, and started working here. Created Meat and Noodle in 2013, which is sort of where I started using my leftover bits of bones and scraps from my animals that I was raising and turning them into broth. And that sort of started kind of me wanting to cook or make food for people for a living. And then Russell saw what we were doing here and decided to move to Vashon and became part of the team immediately, first day.
And so when you say she saw what was happening, what do you mean by that?
So social media was a big thing. I mean, I use Instagram a lot. Mm-hmm. I use it to track what I'm doing and to keep records of what I'm doing. And then I also use it to put my ideas out into the world, essentially. And Russell saw what was happening here on Vashon and decided that this was a place that she wanted to
be. That's really interesting that it's social media. Mm-hmm. We love social media, and it really works if you use it correctly.
Yeah. I mean, I've met a lot of people that have the same ideas that I do and the same beliefs and the same values. And we've been able to team up and partner in ways that I would never have met them if I didn't have
it not
Instagram,
been for that.
Essentially.
Yeah. So Jake, how did you fit into this equation?
Well, in 2015, at the top of 2015, I moved to the island to raise my kids and kind of move my life in a direction that I wanted. And having been in restaurants for years and bars for years, I didn't know how I was going to make a living on the island.
I thought
I was going to be commuting to somewhere in a city I didn't know. But
Where
I was open to doing that. I moved here from Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
Yeah. And shortly after that, I started meeting people that were kind of like mind. Outside of the bar industry, food is probably in most ways more important to me than anything. And so I was fast to make friends on the island who felt the same way. And through mutual friends, met Lauren a couple of months after I moved here, discussing the desire to build a bar on the island that had fresh ingredients and mm-hmm. cocktails that were interesting and classic, but food being so important created an immediate conversation about what we could do together.
And for me, I always wanted a butcher shop, but I know the reality of a butcher shop being sustainable on its own. It needs other things to make it a full business mm-hmm. in this day and age. And so a bar and a restaurant are easy plugins for that. Mm-hmm. It makes total sense to have everything together.
Yeah. And you two or three, probably, because Russell's not here. Hi, Russell. discovered that you had a simple philosophy, a philosophy in common about the food we eat and how it's raised. And
yeah.
Would you like to talk a little bit about your restaurant philosophy and your food philosophy?
Yeah, for sure. So one thing that's really important to us is that we know where the food came from that's in our restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to track dry ingredients, so I won't jump on that soapbox, okay. like spices and,
yeah. right.
you know, a lot of things, you know, they fly under the radar and we make concessions for those things. But right. really anything that we can get from a source that we are completely knowledgeable about is what our intention is. And so, you know, that's our coffee beans are direct from one single farm and roasted by one of our employees. We try to work with wineries that are small and, you know, do organic
mm-hmm.
process.
Mm-hmm.
And, when it comes to the meat, for me, it's how the animal was raised is paramount to what we're doing. You know, what they eat, how they live, how mm-hmm. they die, mm-hmm. how they're transported, everything matters, to me. And then with the vegetables, in terms of flavor, having things that are freshly picked from a grower that waters enough and cares, the flavor comes through. You can't
sure it
really,
does. Yeah.
You can't really dispute that. Like having, you know, we get a salad delivery in the morning and we're serving it that afternoon, then that flavor comes through and people are surprised by how good our salads are, even though it's just because it was picked that morning. That's really the only difference.
Is that it? Because your salads are outstanding. They're outrageously
yeah.
good.
Yeah. I mean, we're lucky here on Vashon to have lots of farms that mm-hmm. grow salad, and so we mm-hmm. get fresh streams of salad in constantly. It doesn't sit around longer than 2 days.
Yeah.
It makes a huge difference.
Well, do you have feelings or ideas and knowledge about the people who are working in the industry and what they're doing and living wage and that kind of thing? Where are you in that?
Yeah, definitely. So one thing that we've definitely found is that just because I've talked about this a lot, just because you don't eat meat doesn't mean your diet is cruelty free.
Okay.
And that is
tell me about that.
That's a big deal because, you know, a lot of the vegetables that we get in the grocery stores come from Mexico and California.
Mm-hmm.
The workers are not treated well in a lot of these farms. I can't say all of them. Some of them probably have good workers, rights and things like that. But generally across the board, it's never cruelty-free. It's always at the expense of somebody else. So mm-hmm. you buy a cheap thing at the grocery store, it's cheap because they didn't have to pay somebody very much to grow it or to process it
right.
or to harvest it. And so the product that we use does cost more. That is a big thing, mm-hmm. you know, because we're paying for the workers and we're paying for the people that harvest it to get paid a living wage.
Right.
And when it comes to the meat, you know, everyone that processes the meat that I get is paid a living wage. And so definitely brings up the cost of everything on mm-hmm. a financial sense, but it lowers the cost in a sort of ethic
social sense.
Right, yeah. right. And so how do you find these people? Where do they come from for you?
Well,
I mean, your sources and how.
Yeah, for Meat and Noodle, I mean, we've been working with farms across the state for a while now.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's just from meeting people. Instagram is a big one. You can see what people's farms look like on Instagram. If you can't tell what their farm looks like, then it's probably not a farm you should buy something from.
It's probably not something you want to see. Yeah,
that's true. And then also we go on farm visits, and I've met a lot of the farmers that I get meat from.
Mm-hmm.
And that I'll, you know, I have a lot of farms still in my back pocket that I don't get meat from yet, just because I'm, you know, sort of building into like working with farmers on a small level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But right now I'm working with a family farm in Moses Lake, mostly to get our beef.
Oh, good.
And that's working out very well.
And you've been to the farm?
I haven't been to this one, but I've seen it and I've read all of their information and I've talked to the owner and mm-hmm. I believe that what they say is true.
And I believe it is too because the food's really good.
Yeah.
I do have a question that I hope you can answer for me, and that is unions and butchers, and how are you different from a union butcher that I see in Fred Meyer.
Yeah, so it's a little different. Those are meat cutters. So unionized butchers are journeymen or meat cutters. It's not really the same thing as being a butcher. Butchers can take a whole animal and break it down and create things out of it. And maybe some of the union journeymen are also butchers, but that's not their job title or part of their job.
So they cut meat that just comes to them.
They
as
cut meat.
Meat
that's already cut, generally. Yeah. There are some stores, I believe, like there are co-ops in Washington. Mm. We're lucky to live in Washington. So mm-hmm. we have co-ops that get in whole animals or things like that. I mean, even I think Whole Foods gets in whole animals sometimes in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And so they do employ butchers to actually do that. But generally across the board at like Albertsons or Safeway or bigger stores like that, it's their meat cutters. They're getting in cryovac plastic bags of already cut meat and then cutting it
into
steaks.
And you don't know where
it
came from. You don't know anything about it.
Yeah. Really. I mean, we as the people, the consumers don't know anything about this meat. And generally we don't want to because it comes from a feedlot.
Yeah.
Straight up.
Yeah. We don't want to know about that.
Yeah.
So beyond that, we were talking earlier about how we can get out of the commercial food system. I don't think we as consumers often don't know we're in a commercial food system. We go to the grocery store and the yellow peppers and the red peppers and everything's so beautiful and it's all lined up just for gorgeous eye candy, you know. But really underneath that and in the non-organic is kind of a puzzle for a lot of people. And we can step out of that by, you know, frequenting the farmers markets.
Yes.
And the food stands.
And farm stands. I mean, we're very lucky here to have farm stands, the farmers market, and extremely lucky to have Vachon Fresh on the island. Which I love pushing Vachon Fresh because it makes it very easy. It's easier than going to the grocery store. You can just
click
in your order and they'll deliver it to you.
And it comes. It's really nice.
And it's from your friends and neighbors. It's from people that you know. So you're supporting a family directly or supporting a person directly instead of supporting a middleman or somebody to make money off of.
Well, thank you for that because that's really encouraging. I had forgotten about that. That's a really good thing to bring up.
We're lucky to have Vachon Fresh.
We are lucky to have Vachon Fresh. That's for sure. So, you know, along with meat, I told somebody one time we were going to talk today, and they said, oh, beef and booze. I said, yeah, we can talk about some beef and booze. And Jake's the booze guy here. He's the bartender, and I've had a couple of your creations, and they're very different. Tell me a little bit about your cocktail history and kind of why you like doing it.
Well, it's there's a few different reasons why I like doing it. Mm-hmm. What we're doing at the Ruby Brink that I think is kind of unique, not unique, to cocktail bars everywhere, is we're running a classic cocktail list. What is different about them is what ingredients we're choosing. So when you see a recipe, when you pull a recipe online for Manhattan, you know, what's in that, what whiskey and vermouth.
You mean which brand?
And bitters.
Yeah.
Brand, where it comes from, the transparency as well. Some of that is really important also in the bottle. But just the quality and the craft and the thought that is put into, the bottles that then get put into the drink.
Right.
Same goes of course for freshness and being able to, when it is an ingredient, an organic ingredient, something that isn't shelf stable, you know, using as fresh as possible.
Oh,
And so, so building classic cocktails is not a new thing, and it's obviously it's a very old thing.
Yeah.
And we opened a bar on an island, and an island that has plenty of, you know, quote unquote signature drinks. We really wanted to highlight the technique and give the island a bar that was intriguing, that started conversations,
right?
That kind of beckoned us to settle into perhaps more of the spirit of classic bar culture, rather than
drinking culture.
Drinking culture.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
And there is a difference in our mind. I mean, it's kind of self-defined, but there is a huge difference between sitting enjoying a cocktail that's been prepared in front of you with fresh and thoughtful ingredients and done using techniques that are proven to make a better product.
Yes.
And then to enjoy that and to enjoy the person you're with or your moment alone or whatever in a way that is kind of more perhaps less isolating and more
communal. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. Right now, we need to take a little break and thank our sponsors who put us here. Be right back.
This portion of Voice of Vashon programming is brought to you by Puget Sound Cooperative Credit Union, where serving the financial needs of our neighbors in a not-for-profit manner, improving housing stock, lowering energy usage, and putting lots of contractors to work is how PSCCU practices community and cooperation Vashon style.
Can't do what we do without our underwriters, like Vashon Market IGA and Vashon Plaza, one block west of the main highway, where you can find everything your family needs, from fresh produce to kids' specials, legendary meats, wine, spirits, and movies. Open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m.
Hello, we're back, and welcome back to Stirring the Pot on Voice of Vashon on Vashon Island. I'm sitting here with Lauren and Jake from Ruby Brink, and we're talking right now about cocktails. One of our favorite summer subjects. And you mentioned earlier, Jake, that there are places known for signature cocktails. And I was wondering if you have one. Do you have a signature cocktail that's your fave?
Yeah, you know, so a signature cocktail is something that, you know, you've created an original recipe. And so... The answer is yes, I have. There are signature cocktails that I've built and sold to people and or made for people at home. And they've been enjoyed, but really it's, you know, I think the core of a good cocktail program comes from understanding classics and understanding how and why cocktails are balanced and how they're put together. And signature cocktail lists or house cocktail lists are a wonderful, beautiful thing that are, and it's very fun and almost entirely built on the principles of classic cocktails.
Right.
So I, you know, in a sense, our classic cocktail list is a signature cocktail list because if I'm curating what goes into a classic cocktail recipe, it's going to taste very different than that same classic cocktail somewhere else.
That's right.
And so really putting the thought into that to find the balance, to find, you know, what a rye whiskey, no two rye whiskeys are alike. No,
well, do you spend time thinking and dreaming about, you make herb syrups that you put in your cocktails. I mean, are you thinking about what herbs and what whiskey or which gin, how would I do this next
drink? Yeah, it's about flavor for sure. And it's about right now with our list. And as we move forward, there are so many fun things that we have in store for our bar at the Ruby Brink. But, you know, we started this with an amazing bar team who largely came with a passion for hospitality and for the craft with very, very little knowledge. And so it's been a wonderfully challenging feat to train our bar staff on classics and how these things are built and to get them thinking in a way that gives them foundational principles, just like in a kitchen. You know, a prep cook learns knife skills before they ever enter a line. We kind of accelerated that behind the bar, but we kind of had to. So our creativity is only just beginning. So when we're talking about herb syrups and things like, or infusions or fortifying wines and doing all kinds of things that we could do, we certainly will. Right now we're enjoying learning together as a staff, learning how to execute our cocktails well and quickly and consistently for everyone drinking them, and to do it in a way that allows us to connect with the guests, which before any mixology or whatever you want to call it, hospitality is fundamental for any bartender.
It certainly is.
And a bartender has to embrace that first, in my opinion.
You can't be mad at your customers.
No.
Yeah, or distracted from them.
Or distracted.
Yeah, or caught up in what you're creating. You have no emotional connection to what you're doing.
Well, that brings another question that I could address to both of you, actually. And that is, how What have you found that surprised you that you didn't know was coming for opening your restaurant? What's I know you've had a lot, but
wow. People.
Yeah, I mean, we're surprised by how many people. You know, we built a business plan based on what we thought would happen, and we were sort of right. But we just didn't realize the amount of support that we would get right off the bat.
I'm so happy. That's so wonderful.
And so that's been a huge, you know, it's one thing to train people when they're new. It's another thing to train people in front of 150 to, to 200 people a day. And so, you know, we're taking that in stride for sure.
Fixing and the car going down the freeway.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, it's, you know, Jake said a lot of our team didn't have a ton of experience, and that's really true. And for that, they're doing an amazing job. But it was just, I'm constantly surprised by the things that, you know, I've been in restaurants for over 20 years now. Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised by the things that people don't know generally.
In just like the workers, you mean?
Our workers and also customers, where I'm customers. Just like, okay, like this is different. I take this for granted and didn't
because
realize.
Because second nature.
Exactly. Right. And so I'm relearning all of that. That's been a kind of a big surprise for me.
Well, there's one thing I notice when I go in there is that it's usually, not always, but usually it's busy. There's, especially at dinner time, there's a lot going on, and it's like it's synchronized because I see the cocktails racing past me, and then here comes Lauren. Maybe she's still got a saw in her hand and she's going to the back of the kitchen, and Russell comes out with some wonderful pot of something lovely, and everyone's so happy to eat there. It's really quite, it's palpable. Well, your philosophy is palpable.
We're happy to be there.
Yeah, and that shows, happy to be there really shows.
You know, this is one thing that's different. You know, people open restaurants for business reasons. That's and then they learn that that's not the reason to open a restaurant.
Right.
We open this restaurant because it's what we want to do and it's where we want to be. And we couldn't imagine doing anything else. So we're happy to be there.
Yeah.
Like, I might be tired because I don't sleep or because I'm working all the time, but it's because I want to.
And it's a good tired
at that
stage.
I could not
be happier.
Can we
talk a little bit more about meat?
Yeah,
I would like to talk a little more about meat and sausages.
Okay.
So who's doing the sausages? Does Russell do those? Or
I make all the sausages.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
So I love making sausage. I feel like sausage making is one of those skills that you learn that you always have, and you can take any meat and anything and grind it up and put it in a sausage. And if you just,
what do you mean by that?
You know, I made this week, I have a kimchi sausage on the menu.
Oh,
it is like half kimchi and half pork. It's
so, you know, good. Speaking of kimchi, I have an aversion to kimchi. I don't do kimchi. And so I went in and got a bowl of, you know, one of your bowls, and it has all those wonderful things in it, and it had kimchi, and I thought, oh. One of my friends was in there, and she said, oh, kimchi's not spicy. It's good. It's good flavor, you know. So I ate it, and now I'm an addict.
Yay.
So
yeah.
I don't know where I got my misinformation.
Well,
but
you know, there's a lot of different
kimchis.
It's
really kimchis. Good.
Yeah, there's a lot of different kimchis. They can be aged for different times, and they can have different levels of spice, and they're all different. So it's
kimchi
really
just... Kimchi sausage is interesting.
And from 1 week or two to the next, ours are different.
Right. Yeah, totally. You know? We have different kimchis all the time.
Put some of the sausage?
I've done, we did an apricot whiskey peppercorn sausage.
Whiskey,
And that's the thing, like you can take any flavors or any combinations and make a sausage out of it. And as long as you have the technique of how to do it correctly, then you can have a product that's pretty fun to eat and people like to eat. And I learned making sausage from a man named Tom Barks. He had been making sausage for 40 years and he taught me how to do it. And he was very careful on how to explain, and his process is very careful. You know, I see a lot of butchers on, you know, making sausage, and they're moving really fast, and they have these big hydraulic machines, and they're like twisting. And Tom was always just like, you have to hold each sausage in your hand, and you need to twist each one. You don't know it's right unless you do that. And so he was very careful, very old school, and taught me that how important it is, taught me how important, like, cutting the meat and, you know, grinding and your grinder and your stuffer, and just like really worked with me for a long time to make sure that my skill level was, you know, up to his par.
And do you, is that one of your favorite things to do?
Yes,
sounds
I
like
love
it.
Making sausage.
Yeah.
I love it.
What's on the agenda for the new sausages? What's coming up?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a good question.
You haven't
thought
about
a lot of blueberries in house right now. I'm definitely considering something like that. And I don't know.
Something good.
It's summertime, so I make a lot of summer. I make a lot of bratwurst and smoked bratwurst. Mm-hmm. And Russell has been asking for kielbasa now for a while, so you might have to venture there.
Kielbasa is pretty good.
Yeah,
totally. I'll take some. Well, I think what it sounds to me like is the whole enterprise is art, and underneath of that are farmers and people and eaters and makers and cookers and.
And survival.
And
I mean, it's the root of what we're doing, and I think why we're all so passionate about it is that you get to strike a you get to strike a core when you're making joy and and art, if you will, from things that we need anyway.
That we would eat anyway. And maybe we'd eat something ugly if we didn't have that pretty food in front of us.
And then in terms of the bar connecting people, more than it is about getting a buzz, it's far more about just being around people and being,
Well, one of my major philosophies in my life is that if we all sat at a table together a little more frequently, the world would be a better place. We'd have more peace. We'd have happier people. Mm-hmm. And to me, your restaurant indicates that for all of us. And it's a living example of how we can be community. We can care for each other. We can do it the right way. And maybe we can still make a living, and that's kind of perfection, I think.
Yeah. Indeed.
In my regard, my hat's off to you.
Thank you. That's definitely the goal.
Yeah. That's good. So I have a rudimentary question here. I was looking at your Facebook page the other day and I saw sea beans. And I want to know what you do with sea beans.
Yeah, so sea beans, you can go harvest them at KVI Beach. Okay. They're all over there. But
I know what they look like.
Yeah, so we use them. They are a crunchy, salty element, so they have a nice like sea sort of breezy flavor, crunchy, salty, and so they're a great vegetable to use in that sort of in that way. Mm-hmm. You can eat them fresh, but a lot of times Russell pickles them.
Oh,
so they're pickled in different aromatics. I've noticed some citrus in there and some other things, and then uses them as a garnish. They're still crunchy. They're still salty. They just now have a little acid and more balance.
Well, she made some turnip pickles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
her pickles are crazy. Everyone's like, how do you make these pickles? And I'm just like, I don't know.
I don't know.
Because every time I try to make pickles, they're not that good.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what
the deal
she
has
is.
Some
our Bloody
secrets.
Mary benefits.
Yeah, our Bloody Mary gets benefits from all the pickle brines, all the meat. We braise our meat in the old pickle brines. I mean, it's just, we wouldn't be here without that pickle program, that's for sure.
Pickle program. I love that.
Riding on the back of the pickle program.
Yeah. Well, we just have a couple of minutes left, and in that time, I'd like to ask you, Jake, if you were to recommend a cocktail, let's say something with vodka or gin or something that people are going to have at home. Do you have any kind of herbal infusion that might be interesting for me to do? Any ideas about that?
You've asked me some sweetly specific questions about cocktails, and I know I keep giving you vague answers, but what I would do is
tell me what you would do.
What I would do, what I would say to anyone is go outside and go to your herb garden that you've spent almost no energy planting because they grow all over the place.
Okay,
and especially on Vashon.
Yes,
and
they
pick thyme or rosemary or any of these other accessible herbs and make yourself a simple syrup.
Okay.
Get some fresh citrus and learn how to balance sweet and sour and then add your favorite alcohol to it and start experimenting at home.
Wonderful.
But getting basically in touch with just walking outside and getting inspired by what's in your garden.
That's a wonderful
idea. Hopefully you have some element
something.
Garden.
I don't have a garden,
and
but
if
I have
you
a
don't,
windowsill.
You have a friend that does that is willing to share.
That's right. That's right. Well, I just would like to thank both of you. We ran out of time again, but I just really thank both of you for coming and sharing your philosophy and your knowledge and
thank you.
Your enthusiasm.
Yeah, thank
I'm
you
so
very much.
Happy you're here, and I'm going to come again soon to the restaurant.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everybody. It was really nice to have you. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.